What are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
Te Reo Māori was systematically and violently removed from the Indigenous people of this country. Its decline and near extinction was only halted and reversed by major initiatives introduced in the 1970s and 80s, struggles that were led by Māori. In 1972, a petition was presented to Parliament to promote the language. That year, a Māori Language Day was introduced, and in 1975, this became a Māori Language Week. In 1978, the first officially bilingual school opened in Ruatoki in Te Uruwera. In 1982, the first Kōhanga Reo opened in Lower Hutt, beginning the Kōhanga Reo movement, which has been credited with ensuring the next generation held on to the language by immersing young tamariki in the reo. Kura Kaupapa full immersion schooling followed, and the first Māori-owned Māori language radio station, Te Reo Oponeke, went on air in 1983. In 1985, the Waitangi Tribunal heard the Te Reo Māori claim, which asserted that Te Reo was a taonga that the Crown was obliged to protect under Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Māori was made an official language of New Zealand under the Māori Language Act in 1987. Every single one of these initiatives was fought for. It did not come easy. It did not come lightly. And the resistance it faced was incredibly racist at every point. The systematic removal of the language was a conscious effort by colonisers to enforce assimilation to the English culture that was now the majority. Today, Te Reo Māori has had a resurgence, but it remains at risk. Today, unlike in 1984, when Nida Glavish was demoted for saying kia ora as a national telephone tolls operator and refusing to use only formal English greetings, today we hear kia ora regularly in both formal and non-formal spaces. We hear it every night on the 6 o'clock news. On BFM, you'll hear Ata Māori, good morning, as well as Ki ngā āhuatanga o Tangaroa I tēnei rā to introduce the surf report. On Radio New Zealand, you hear all reporters signing off saying aho, which means I or me, as in ko Lillian Hanley aho. In fact, this was the very reason for multiple BSA complaints against RNZ. So, while it has become commonplace to hear, some people still find it, funnily enough, alarming. It's here where our discussion today begins. Broadly speaking, as a broadcaster myself, I believe it is fairly straightforward to acknowledge not only an official language of Aotearoa New Zealand, but the Indigenous language of this country. And, especially, as a Pākehā from this country, acknowledging the history and doing something about it to undo the damage which has been done and continues to have effects. This is a personal discussion, but our identity as peoples of this country is personal and is largely informed by the media. Who is it that we choose to be, and how are we going to achieve that? Guyon Espiner is one of the presenters of Morning Report on Radio New Zealand. For some time now, he has been weaving te reo into his work wherever he can. He starts the show with a mihi in the reo and introduces himself as well.
People who listen to Morning Report might hear a bit of that. I try and mix it up in the mornings. Maybe I'll say, kei te whakarongo mai koe ki te reo rangi o Aotearoa. You're listening to Radio New Zealand, mo te hotaka o te ata, ko Guyon Espiner, tōku ingoa for the programme of the morning or for Morning Report. I'm Guyon Espiner. I might flash it up a bit and say, tēnā tātou, kua whakarauika mai, e raro I te tuanui o tāne whakapiripiri, which is really like saying welcome to you under the cloak of this special building, I suppose, or
that's
which
my
is
favourite.
A bit more sort of metaphorical, I suppose.
When he first started to do this, he got a lot of slack. People didn't like it. At BFM, we have also attempted this and also received some slack. About a month ago, I happened to see Guyon in the supermarket and thought I'd ask whether he was interested in having a conversation on air about it all. In deferring to my tuakana, or older sibling in the broadcaster sense, I wanted to know more about his reasons for learning te reo Māori. Turns out, using te reo on the radio was a secondary priority to his lifelong commitment to te ao Māori, largely influenced by his family and his hope to communicate with his daughter in te reo.
When I started learning the language, which was a couple of years ago, I sort of had to unlearn a lot of the ways that we said things back in those days. You'd have beautiful places like Taitapu, which were called Taitap, and that's how they were said in those days. And so there was a lot of unlearning to be done, I guess, as life went on. But I married a Māori woman, and we've got a daughter who's 5 now, so that's been part of the journey too. And so I sort of... you know, messed around with books and stuff for a little while, and then I thought 2 years ago I'll get seriously into this. We wanted our daughter to be fluent in her language, and she's just started at a bilingual school here in Auckland, and so that was a big motivation too. I guess I sort of weave various aspects of my life together. There's the family bit, and there's the broadcasting bit too, and it was a case of, you know, learn a little, share a little, learn a bit more, share a bit more. Mm. And I thought that, hey, while I'm learning, I can, and I've got a mic, and when I hit the red light, then no one can shut me up. And, you know, I'll use this and share this beautiful language if I can.
So was that part of it sort of secondary to your already present obligation to your whānau?
Yeah, no, totally it was. And that's a good question, and you're totally right, it was. So that was first. First was, I want to learn this language, you know. I don't want my daughter getting away and speaking a language that I don't understand. I wanted to learn it for a while. And so, yeah, obligation to family is a good way to think about it, or just inspiration from that, or, you know, not too sure how to define it, but it just felt right. Mm. It felt right to do that. And you know, I thought, well, as I'm learning, why don't I try and weave this into what I do in the morning, which is get up and talk on radio. And if it is an official language, and if it is part of our land, why don't we use it? So that's been our kaupapa, is like, let's use it.
Has learning another language shifted your thinking or paradigms at all?
Yeah, totally. I think that the way languages influence your thoughts are quite profound. Even the way language is structured has an influence on your thought process, I think. You often find the passive voice adopted in the reo. And, you know, so you are less at the centre of it. Things happen to you, or, you know, it's less sort of whakahihi, you know, you're less sort of promoting yourself. And I think that's a big part of, from what I've experienced in Te Ao Māori, that, you know, that isn't received too well if you do that. And so I think that's quite interesting, because when you structure a language, it's going to reflect the thoughts and the cultural practices of the people who speak it, right? So I found that quite interesting. And I think also when you are trying to express things and, you know, there aren't direct translations. You and I were talking off air about that, how it's such a poetic language. And, you know, the way that you perceive and try and explain things naturally changes when you're using another language. So I think that's an exciting thing for all of us, and a real deficit if we remain, as we sadly have been, quite a monolingual country.
Or the language does sort of allow you to, it opens up that world, right, where you are able to understand more about tikanga and te ao Māori itself, not just the language. And it's almost humbling for someone perhaps who has been raised in a monocultural world.
It's totally humbling. It really is, and that's why it's good for the soul as well. That's one of the many reasons, but it is good for the soul. You're in command, especially if you're in the media, broadcasting. This is the language you use, and you're used to being in command of that. It's pretty good experience. You go try to do that in the reo and see how you get on, you know. I mean, it is a humbling experience, which is one of the good things, right? You know, put yourself into that position. But also, just for your experience of New Zealand, Aotearoa, I mean, you know, once you start learning the language, a lot of things start to make more sense. And once you start learning what words mean, and then you look at place names, you know, and you know that weta means hot or burnt, and you know what ere means, then you can't look at ere weta the same, especially once you find out the mythology or otherwise about someone rolling over into a campfire at night. Whack it into MaoriDictionary.co.nz and you'll find out what I mean. But I grew up with my river, the closest big river, you know, Waimakariri. I had no idea. We called it Waimak. you know, just cold water. So like those, and a lot of people say, oh, I don't, you know, what's the utility of the language? They'll be probably living on a street with a Māori name. They'll be living in an area with a Māori name. Why was it called that? What does this tell us? There's so much that sort of unfurls. And look, I'm still at the beginning of my journey. I'm not here to lecture anyone about it. I just think curiosity is a good thing. I don't have a big, you know, I don't beat people with a moral stick about why they should pick up the reel, but I just think as your curiosity unfurls, there's a whole lot about it which starts to make sense, and you start to look at the stories, look at origins of words and whakatauki and taiparapara and a whole lot of other, you know, even the kianga and just a whole lot of the other structures, and you look, and then woven into that will be stories and that teach us a lot about the land and about our people. So, yeah, I just think there's a lot to unpick there.
And so how did this manifest in your work at RNZ?
The thought behind it is, you know, try and weave it in and try to make it fun without lecturing people about it, because people get turned off for it very quickly. And, you know, this is arupahu auraki for us. This is mainstream media largely. So, but if you say, kawe ma harahare homa, don't worry people, don't worry my friends, or kia ata haere in the traffic, or te matapai huereri mo te ranei, this is the weather forecast for today, and you just do that and you translate it, then if you do it again and again, then these phrases and words come into people's ears all the time, you know, and hopefully that can interest them, or that can be the start of their journey. That's all I'm hoping to do. You know, we're not expecting people to become language experts by listening to it, and I'm, you know, just a beginner myself. But I do think that we can do it in a way that's encouraging and fun. Normalise isn't a nice word, but it's a useful word.
I struggle with that word.
It isn't a nice word, but I suppose if you mean I can use these words in a normal conversation and feel okay about it and just feel like it's okay, then that's what I mean, I think. And I think that's important. Mm. And you're only going to get there if you do it again and again and again. Like, no one's going to look at you in the workplace and say, kia ora, you know, kai te pihe koe, you know, how are you going? That, you know, if you do that every morning at work and then just translate, then after a while it becomes natural. And you need to do that a lot for it to become natural. I guess that's part of...
Even for yourself saying it?
Yeah.
Or for other people hearing it?
Both, I think. We've part of this journey for all of us is for these phrases and words in this language to become a part of normal conversation, to hear it on the streets, to hear it in the shops. Because the whakamā about it, the shyness about it, is a massive part for people. Because language is so intrinsic to who we are. You know, you talk about getting on stage or speaking in front of people. For most people, in any language is hard, right? So if you switch to a language you're learning, the fear of verbally making a mistake is huge. It's probably similar to the fear of getting beaten. You know, it's big. It's real. And so you need to do that a lot for it to become, and we use normalised, or to become okay. I don't know, you pick your word, but that's why we need to do it a lot.
This might be a bit of a jump, but I'm going to loop it back. The idea of fear. Now, I understand it, and I do have time for people who are afraid of getting it wrong, right? But if there's a genuine want or need behind that and an understanding that they want to try and that they should be trying and that there is something big about this. But I sort of also struggle with people who... So you say there's a lack of general education about this country's history in this country. What I'm trying to say is that people were beaten for speaking this language.
Yes.
And then you had a generation of people whose language it was not having that language. And for them, it was also a struggle, an embarrassment, a fear to begin that journey again. And almost I sort of, when I see somebody who perhaps has a lot of privilege and does have time to, you know, do Māori language classes or that sort of thing, but also, for example, Mark Richardson, who said on air, he had an interaction with somebody where he said something and then he got it wrong and he was so embarrassed that he didn't want to try it again. I sort of have little sympathy there because I'm like, actually, your whakamā is very, very little to somebody who has historical trauma connected to this loss of language.
I think it does, and I think it's a really good point. I've heard that quite a bit too, that, you know, I tried and then I was told I got it wrong and so I'm not going to do it again. And as you point, well, you're dealing with a generation that's effectively had the language ripped out from them, and then in some cases sees the descendants of the people who did that learning the language in a better than them, and that must be hard. So you've got all that mamai around that. Mm. So I do understand that, totally understand that. I do think though that we need to acknowledge that. That learning a language and using a language that you're not familiar with is going to be nerve-wracking, but you know, get over it and do it, because you'll largely get support. You know, we all make mistakes.
That's part of learning anything new, right?
Yeah, you don't give up.
Is making those mistakes and acknowledging that you're not going to be an expert immediately.
Totally, yeah.
Okay, back to the radio. So when there was that kind of initial... You said that you have been doing general intros and Māori phrases and that sort of thing for a long time. When you started to kind of implement more complex language, I suppose, in your own intros, was there pushback from your own workplace, or were they quite receptive?
There wasn't pushback from my workplace, certainly not formally. There were a couple of sort of people and comments I heard who thought we were going a bit far with it, but in general there was support, and there was a lot of support from the top, you know, a lot of support from Paul Thompson, who's been hugely supportive of this. There was a lot of amu amu from sections of the audience. It was extraordinary. Once it goes from kia ora to saying the names and days of the week and the date, you know, even that, some people freaked out, completely freaked out.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, they really did. And you would get an avalanche. It was, and a couple of times it was quite confronting, you know, because you do a mihi at the top of the hour and you would literally, we're sitting in front of these computers here in the studios at BFM, but in Radio New Zealand, just across the road, I have the screens up so I can see the social media and I can see the texts that are coming in and the emails, because we have to use them for whakahoki kōrero, or the feedback that we might read out at times. And you would literally get sort of a whole wave of, you know, 15 texts saying revolting things, you know. What is it? Gibberish, sounds like a turkey gobble and that sort of thing, and worse that I don't want to repeat.
Fair enough.
You know, some really dreadful stuff that you think, man, where are you? What are you?
Yeah.
You know, who are you? And yeah, you'd be like, wow.
My question around it was that your response, though, to that pushback, I guess, or... I guess racism, really, from listeners. You were very straightforward in I suppose denouncing those views that believe Te Reo Māori has no place on national radio, or at least you were very kind of, you came across as quite strong and comfortable in your position in saying, well, that's not going to stop me because this is more important.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I think that's right. And it, like we were saying before, well, hey, think of the people and the generations who've really put their necks on the line. I'm not painting myself as any, you know, more than a blade of grass in that forest, you know. So, gee, if they were willing to do that for the language, then what's taking some flack from some people who've sent in some text messages? I do say that a couple of times I was like, oh, gee, this is going to be pretty tough. But you know, I thought, oh, well, bugger it, basically. You know, I've got the mic. If people want to take it off me in the end, that's fine, but I'm going to do this. And what, no matter what I do in broadcasting or media, and in life probably, it's going to be part of my life. You know, it's a lifelong journey for me. For however long I've got left on the planet, I'll be learning, and I'll never be an expert. I'll be learning, but I see this as a lifelong journey, and I'll weave it into my life. And if that means giving me a mic, then people need to know that will come with using the reel where I can and where it's where I feel it's appropriate to do it within my own skill range. And I'll do that in a speech, even if it's to a, you know, Rotary Club. I'll start with a me, you know. So if they don't want to hear it, then that's cool. Mm. But that's what I'll do.
Worry Week on The Wire.